afternoon. Yes, I'm Ann Eller. We were at the job fair this morning. What an experience that was. Met a lot of good people, saw a lot of people we knew, and so I think they had a great turnout for the job fair today. Hope if you are looking for a job that you were there, there were lots of possibilities. But this afternoon on Meet Me at the Diner, our very special guest today is Dr. John Hicks. He is a rheumatologist. He has been here in Greenwood since 2001. And welcome to the show today, Dr. Hicks.
Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. So, you know, I know that you do a lot of research and that you look at a lot of different aspects, but what exactly is a rheumatologist? Because we always think of arthritis and that type of thing. What exactly do you do?
A rheumatologist is somebody who's been trained first in internal medicine, which is a broader field of multiple diseases, and then specializes in those diseases that primarily cause what you know as arthritis, but which is actually a broader group of diseases that are caused more by immune dysregulation, such as lupus and vasculitis. But many of them do have as a commonality the arthritis as part of the diseases. But it historically was based on rheumatic fever, then on rheumatoid arthritis, and now on a much broader group of diseases that are due to immune dysregulation.
Immune dysregulation. Now, that's an interesting term.
We've changed the word from autoimmunity. People used to think that these diseases were just your immune system attacking yourself. It looks like it's far more complicated. It's really not attacking yourself. It's recognizing some foreign antigen, like a piece of a virus or a piece of a bacteria, in cells that are part of the your mosaic of your two parents. You're mostly one parent, a little bit of the other parent, and your immune system knows how to recognize those. But when something changes them, like a virus or bacteria or something else, then the immune system gets confused. And it doesn't know if it's being invaded and should eradicate those cells or those pieces of cells or not. And that's partly genetic and partly just a mistake that the immune system can make.
Wow. So now you, of course, you have built a new office. Well, you've been in that office how many years now?
Almost 3 years now.
Almost 3 years. And where is your office?
It's over on 917-225 South.
Okay. Okay. It's not far from the hospital, is it? Not really?
Down the road from the hospital, near Tower Point, near CPW.
Yeah,
It's a little bit off the beaten track.
Well, that's okay. But your doctoring business certainly has expanded here. And of course, I guess part of that is because our population is aging more. Do you see more elderly people?
That's a common conception among the public that rheumatologists just take care of older people. But in actual fact, the inflammatory diseases that we're just discussing start in people who are in their teenage years or young 20s, such as ankylosing spondylitis and psoriatic arthritis, juvenile arthritis. Those are the inflammatory diseases that can affect the joints and do other things to you. And then rheumatoid arthritis usually affects people in their 40s when it starts. So the vast majority of people with the inflammatory diseases are much, much younger. But after you've been taking care of somebody who's 40 for 10 years, yeah, they're getting older, so yes, we continue to take care of them. Unfortunately, we can't cure the diseases, so we continue to follow them and treat them as long as they're responding well. Osteoarthritis is the disease that affects the elderly. That usually starts in the late 40s, early 50s, and doesn't become a serious enough problem until you're in your 60s and 70s. So I think that's where the misconception is that rheumatology is just taking care of the elderly. It's much, much more. Probably two-thirds of our patients are under 50.
Oh, I didn't realize that. We were talking about before we came on the air about the different types of arthritis, and even gout can affect your hands. I was particularly interested in talking about hands since we're in the jewelry business, and we see so many people that they just seem to have such problems, and it costs me a lot of problems for people that want to wear beautiful rings.
Until you said that, I never realized that that would be something that we should incorporate into our rheumatology marketing, as we should set up an office right next door to the jewelry store.
Well, that could be true. Once a week, yeah, come on by, yeah.
Because clearly you are seeing things long before the patients recognize that it's something they should go to the physicians about.
Yeah. But there's a lot that can be done about it, which I think a lot of people don't realize.
Absolutely true. The common osteoarthritis, which doesn't hurt very much but does cause some significant deformities in the small joints of the fingers, we still don't have any drug that will stop the progression of that one. It doesn't hurt very much, so many people don't do anything about it, but that can be surgically corrected. You can replace the joints or even remodel the joints, especially the thumb joint, which does cause a lot of dysfunction, disability in patients who have it in their thumb joints. So those can be replaced now by the hand surgeons. But the rheumatoid arthritis and the psoriatic arthritis that affect the fingers the most and damage them, those we try to treat before any damage occurs, before any noticeable, permanent deformity occurs, so that you don't have to enlarge the rings too many times.
Well, how do people know that they might be having this then, if it doesn't really show up that much?
It shows up mostly with pain, particularly with rheumatoid arthritis and psoriatic arthritis, and then within months or years, it clearly shows up with some persistent swelling and loss of ability to fully bend that particular joint, so that in your hands you notice right away. And it may affect one or two joints early and then affect many more joints. So by the number of joints it's affecting, the progression, as we use the word, of more and more joints, more and more severe pain, more and more swelling, the patients won't miss it. They may ignore it, but they won't miss it.
Now, is this something, can somebody come and see you, or do they have to have a referral?
Most cases around the planet, actually, it works better if you go to whoever your primary physician is first. It's faster that way, because that primary physician will have all your medical records, which are pertinent to decision-making when it comes to what to treat that patient with. It's also pertinent because some of them might actually have a diagnosis that's easy to figure out from what their previous medical problems are, so it makes it more efficient, that's all.
But one of the things I know that you try to do when you're working with a patient is, so many of our patients end up with so many different types of medications. And I know one of the things that you're famous for, because people tell me this, is that you like to help get them off so many medications.
Well, that's just the general trend in medicine in general, and rheumatology specifically, is to treat the problem with the most efficient medicine.
Right.
Most efficient means the fewest number.
Sure. So
that's a general medical principle.
Sure. Well, except we do see people that are on all different kinds of medications, and then sometimes somebody will get a hold of them and say, look, we've got all this. Maybe we can reduce it back some, right?
Sometimes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm not going to ask you about our medical system, because I imagine that you probably could start talking about that and insurance and whatnot. So I'm not going to talk about that. But we are going to take a break. And when we come back, if you've got a question for Dr. Hicks, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. When we come back, one of the things we're going to talk about, when we had Dr. Hicks back on in 2008, vitamin D. Is it the panacea that they thought it was going to be? We'll find out. So don't you go away.
Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Happy days, Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days, Thursday, Friday, happy days.
That's right. We are right back here at Sharp Facets Gallery on the 72 Bypass. Now, one of the things that I know that Dr. Hicks has done over time is that you have done a lot of research. You enjoy doing research, don't you?
Yes, I was involved way back in the early days after I graduated from medical school in virology and immunology, and that's how I became interested in rheumatology. And in those days, many people didn't understand how the immune system worked. How do we protect ourselves against viruses and bacteria? And why doesn't it make a lot more mistakes than it apparently does? And then from there, I got interested in rheumatology, clinical rheumatology, people with the disease. And then from there, I got much more interested in finding medicines that would work for those diseases. We didn't have very many 25, 35 years ago. So So I was involved in the development of some of those medicines for a while.
So, and what about today? Are you still doing research, or have you cut back and too busy taking care of patients?
Part of the appeal of coming to South Carolina was that it was time to stop spending all day teaching and all day doing research and all night working in the emergency room and just do rheumatology, clinical medicine, and do consultative research with the pharmaceutical companies who were inquiring or asking questions. But yes, I still love being close to the development of new drugs or the development, in our word, is the application of those medicines to other diseases or refining how they're used to make them more efficient and safer.
Absolutely. Now, you know, when you were back in 2008, there was a big discussion in what vitamin D would do for us if we had large quantity. Really, it was large quantities of it, and you're saying that that didn't work out to be so. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that was a very exciting area. Panacea was a close description of what it was. The discovery quickly all around the world when vitamin D measurements were easy to do and cheap to do was that many patients, if not all, with rheumatoid arthritis or lupus or ankylosing spondylitis were vitamin D deficient by most people's assessments of the levels. And people began to think, well, did that have something to do with why they got it? Does that have something to do with why they still have it? Does that have something to do with their treatment outcomes? And if we treat them and correct the vitamin D, that should make them better or easier to treat or something better.
Sure.
And none of that happened. And the same thing with another disease, which is a non-inflammatory disease, fibromyalgia. It turned out that's a non-inflammatory disease in which people just ache and don't sleep very well. And those people are all vitamin D deficient. Same story. Well, maybe if we corrected their vitamin D, that will make some of their symptoms better. And same story, correcting the vitamin D didn't do anything for those people either. So we're still at a loss as to why certain groups of diseases are associated with a vitamin D deficiency, and more disappointing, why didn't correcting the vitamin D deficiency make any difference?
So, but do you make sure that those patients do get enough vitamin D? Or do you...
Half the physicians that are close to this subject are saying it probably doesn't matter. They're still looking for a subset of people, genetic subset perhaps, that might benefit from correcting the vitamin D. And they're still trying to analyze if people who have spontaneous vitamin D deficiency at a very young age, if you do correct their vitamin D deficiency when they're children, might that help protect against some of these diseases? But that's going to take 10 or 20 years to answer.
Sure, absolutely. So vitamin D. But
so most people are saying it probably doesn't matter. I've stopped measuring the vitamin Ds.
Stop measuring. Okay.
It doesn't affect the treatment, so it doesn't affect the decision-making, so I, for one, have just stopped. But I was very enthusiastic about it, as you know,
that
I thought it was going to be something that would help these patients' symptoms, at least, and so far that hasn't turned out to be the case.
It'd be nice if it was something easy like that, wouldn't it?
Well, that's what the people who were the naysayers all said. Here we go again with another vitamin. It's all going to be a bust, and they were right.
Naysayers were right. Chop one up for them. Okay. What other things are on the forefront right now of things that might be something that futuristically they're thinking may be helpful?
With rheumatoid arthritis and psoriatic arthritis, which are the two most destructive diseases and very common diseases, the pharmaceutical industry is still developing newer agents, even though we have a whole handful now of very effective medications and very, very safe medications. So we got half a dozen TNF-alpha blockers, and then we're blocking some other enzymes, and they're named by the enzymes that they block, which are enzymes that are involved in the cascade of inflammatory decision-making in the immune system, and selected so that they don't interfere with the immune system that's fighting infections or the immune system that's preventing you from getting any cancers. Probably one out of 5,000 of these developed drugs makes it that far, but that's we've already got at least a dozen that we can use and use safely. The cost of them is still a problem, but the efficacy, as we call it, and the safety of them is excellent. It's actually, some of them are even safer than the things that you think are safe, like Naprosyn and Advil. They're at least as safe, if not safer, than some of those.
So there are...
So we've got lots of medicines now that we can use. The issue is just the cost.
As always, it comes down to the cost, doesn't it? Yeah. Well, you know, it's like Botox was originally for, was not for the purpose it's used for, but they found that it was very helpful, right?
I don't know as much about Botox. So.
But they did, it was originally for something else.
You start out, all these medicines are being tested in other diseases, but they're being tested just in the so-called immune dysregulation, autoimmune diseases. So one will be developed for arthritis of one kind and then tested to see if it'll work in the other kind of arthritis. So they usually start out with rheumatoid arthritis and then see if it'll work for psoriatic arthritis, and it's not always the case. Some of them that work for other autoimmune diseases like Crohn's disease or the skin disease psoriasis may not work for the arthritis or all the different types of arthritis. And even after they're developed for those indications, as we call it, even in the individual patient in which they're supposed to work for all those things, they don't always. And so that's the good reason they have lots of medicines, because if you come in and medicine X is supposed to correct your psoriasis and the arthritis, but medicine X only for some reason corrects the psoriasis, but it didn't help the arthritis, then you go on to medicine Y and see if that one will work better in you, even though in the clinical trials both drugs work for both things. So individual people are still genetically enough different that you have to keep testing them. But I think that was the question you asked was developing these drugs in other diseases. Yes, that goes on continuously.
You know, one of the things that that always concerns me, you know, sometimes I think about they're always advertising medications on TV, and then they tell you what the potential side effects are. Sometimes I just think, why would I take that drug if I was going to have all these side effects? Would I not be better just to suffer with the disease? Sometimes I think...
It's a big problem, because the FDA and the lawyers for the pharmaceutical companies both say that if you don't warn people about that one in 1 million thing, then the lawyers have an opening to sue the pharmaceutical industry for billions of dollars, and literally billions of dollars, if some person happens to get some disease that person claims was drug-related. And if you didn't have that listed as something that went wrong during the clinical trial, even if it wasn't related to the drug. So that's the reason they have to say that. And if they don't, then the FDA mandates that it be said on television. There's a cute email going around about advertising tequila on television.
Okay.
And it starts out with a nice, expensive restaurant with a man and a woman, he in a tuxedo, she in a nice, expensive evening gown, being ushered to a beautiful table and being served the tequila and sipping on it very slowly, and nice music being played. And, you know, this isn't a bar scene where people are chugging beers. They're just sipping on it and quiet, and they're talking about how tequila is useful for relaxing from a busy work day and getting to know your spouse or your girlfriend, and goes on like that. And then after all of that, which goes on for nearly a minute of this beautiful scene and these nice words about what tequila can do for you pleasantly, it goes into the rapid fire, what could go wrong, and go real, real fast, like dancing on tables without your clothes on, dancing on tables without your clothes on with people you don't know, taking those people home that you don't know. And it goes to the real, real, real fast.
Yeah.
So it's the same. It was a parody or a satire on what is required in this country. But you're right, it's a stopper, as we call it, when patients hear that, even though we've tried to reassure them that those things are not even drug-related. They're usually related to the disease itself untreated rather than the drug that they're used to treat it. So it is a problem, and the pharmaceutical companies have to make that decision to get their name out there. They have to go through that, but then they usually don't keep running the ad because they know it deters patients from making a decision. One of my patients had a cute thing about Phil Mickelson advertising the Enbrel, which we use quite a bit. And then her comment was, when I asked her about that, she says, well, I heard all those terrible things, but I figured somebody as rich and famous as he is probably doesn't believe that really happens. We wouldn't have taken that drug.
Exactly.
So that was a reassuring thing to her. Well, okay, he's using it and still playing golf and isn't dead yet, so it must be all right. But it is a problem because the lawyers require the list of things that aren't even necessarily drug-related. They're just disease-related, but they happen during the clinical trial, and that's just the law of this land. Somebody needs to educate the public more about that phenomenon so the public better understands.
Absolutely.
That list of probably unrelated events.
All right. Well, we are right here at Sharp Fast's Gallery. I am talking to Dr. Hicks. He is in rheumatology and studies all these immune diseases. So when we come back, we're going to talk more. Hey, if you've got a question, don't hesitate to pick up that phone and give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We'll be right back.
This is Philip Biffle, your Greenwood Edward Jones Financial Advisor. Do you have a recovery plan for your investments? If not, there are several reasons we think you should. While interest rates are very low, certain income strategies and investments could help increase your investment income. Also, many investment portfolios are out of balance at a time when proper investment diversification may be most critical. You also may want to review your portfolio to consider replacing lower quality investments with higher quality investments that may be at attractive prices. No one can control what the market will do next. You can, however, take advantage of investment opportunities that exist today. At the same time, it is important to be well positioned for whatever the market does tomorrow. Please call me, Philip Biffle, or stop by my office today to develop your personalized recovery plan investment strategy. Please call me, Philip Biffle, at 229-0444, or stop by my office today to develop your personalized recovery plan investment strategy. Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, member SIPC.
Right here at Sharp Facets Gallery on the 72 Bypass. What are we talking about? We're talking about arthritis and all the other related diseases, which I didn't actually realize that there are so many that are related, like gout and lupus and all the different types of arthritis, osteoporosis, fibromyalgia, and tendonitis. That one too? Tendonitis is one too?
Some of the diseases are named by what part of you they affect. So tendonitis refers to someone who just has inflammation in a tendon in their shoulder or in their ankle or their heel or in their fingers.
Okay. But
fibromyalgia is actually a more complicated syndrome in which there isn't anything measurably wrong, but there is a diagnosable sleep disorder that's peculiar to that disease. And those people are tired and they hurt all the time, but there isn't anything wrong with the places where they hurt. That was a disease that took a long time to figure out, and we're still trying to figure it out.
Well, I know a lot of when that first came up, they just thought that, oh, you're just complaining just to complain. It's not really that way.
A guy named Moldovsky up in Toronto, who's actually still alive, was the first person to pay attention to patients who were complaining without explanation of the onset of a syndrome that they didn't have anything before, of where they were just had overwhelming fatigue that they couldn't explain, and he couldn't explain as a doctor, and also complained that they couldn't stay asleep. They kept turning and tossing and turning and tossing all the time. And when they got up in the morning, they complained, I could tell I didn't sleep a wink. My husband says I'm throwing the sheets all over the place and never lay still. He tested those people, and he was the first one to document that there was clearly something slightly different about their sleep disorder from depression sleep disorders or anxiety sleep disorders or other types of things that could be doing that. And then he tested some medical students, which is it's been criticized as they were already abnormal just by their nature. They were already sleep deprived just
exactly.
by their studies, especially in those days. And he played classical music in earphones when the computer would show that their brain waves were in the so-called deep sleep, which is just a delta wave sleep, and then there was some alpha waves that would be generated when he played the music. But it wasn't enough to wake them up,
mm-hmm.
or wake them up in the common sense, or wake them up so they even knew they were awake. But it was enough to change their EEG patterns, and after 3 days of doing that, they had fibromyalgia symptoms. They couldn't walk. They were in such pain they couldn't move. And they were so exhausted they couldn't do their studies. And then it reversed by itself within just 2 or 3 days of not doing anything, just letting them sleep. So he was the first person to prove that you can induce those symptoms with a sleep disorder. And it's been confirmed repeatedly that that kind of sleep disorder is pretty common in fibromyalgia. So fibromyalgia is thought to be just a spontaneous onset of that sleep disorder. We don't know why. There are many things that can cause it, though.
But
depression,
today,
stress.
But today they have things that make it...
There are lots of medicines that work. Way back in the old days, we used to use the first antidepressant Prozac in the morning and an earlier antidepressant in very tiny doses called Elavil in the evening. And to this day, that's still the number one treatment worldwide. And in this country, we have two newer drugs, Lyrica and Cymbalta, which do as well and are much more popular. but a lot more expensive.
Yeah, okay, all right. It's always about the expense. Now, one of the ones that I really wanted to talk about, you were telling me some stuff about gout. We always think about gout like in a big toe or in the foot, but you're telling me you can have gout in your hands.
You can have gout in your hands, and I didn't mention earlier, in your elbows and the olecranon bursal area and wrists, fingers, just as commonly as in your foot or toe. It's a common misconception, probably from old paintings and old stories.
What is gout?
Gout is a crystal-induced disease from uric acid crystals. And uric acid is a chemical we all have in our bodies. It's the end product of breaking down all the chemicals before they're excreted. And the uric acid in certain genetically prone individuals will build up to a higher level and simultaneously settle in different joints. And the crystals of uric acid will cause inflammation just as furiously as a bacteria will.
Wow. But it can be...
But it can occur in the hands.
And it can be cured, or can it...
Yes, not cured, but completely treated with medications that lower the uric acid and simultaneous treatment with a unique medicine called colchicine that is unique for being able to specifically stop the inflammation from the uric acid. It doesn't work for other types of arthritis, but it works for that one. You need to stay on, though, the medicines to keep the uric acid low in order
otherwise
to prevent the gout from coming back.
Otherwise, it'll build back up again when you go off of it, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah. We were talking about the fact that you have to have, that some of the drugs that you go on are things that you're going to take for arthritis and whatnot for the rest of your life to maintain your joints. Can you reduce your joints if they get big? Can they be reduced?
The enlargement is usually due to bony changes, and that part usually won't change, but some of the enlargement is just from the soft tissue swelling, the swelling of the capsule around the joint, swelling of the tissues around that capsule. That part will markedly improve. So what most people see in terms of the swelling of the joints will improve. But once there's been significant damage and bony overgrowth, that part won't change.
Okay. All right. Well, we are here with Dr. Hicks. We're talking about, interesting stuff here today. Now, you know, when you talk about the drugs, and I know since you've done a lot of research, you know, it takes a long time to come up with a drug and put it through its paces to get to the end where people can actually use the drug. And I guess that's why we have so much expense in drugs. But when they come out with the generic versions of them, that is usually less expensive. Why is that?
Good question.
I know it was a long one, but it's something I think about every once in a while.
Part of it is the cost that the pharmaceutical industry has to invest, which is billions now, to develop that medication. And then they have a time frame before a company can make it for a lot less money because they didn't invest all of that research time. And that time frame is like 5 or 10 years after the drug is finally approved by the FDA and that company can sell it. So they have to price it such that they can recoup all the costs that, remember, shareholders, you, the stockholder, are the one that wants to see that that pays off. So it's not just the company's fault. It's the system we have, where the people who own the shares and the stocks of these companies are not going to buy the stocks if they don't see them improve or at least hold their value. But the generic companies are able to make these things much less expensively. And in many cases, the pharmaceutical company that developed the drug will actually be the generic producer once it goes off patent, as they call it.
So
it's the cost of the investment of the research that has to be recouped.
Sure. Now, what about the fact of generic versus a name brand? Is there any difference?
There's a slight difference in what we call bioavailability. The brand name has to pass very strict tests proving that when you swallow the pill, that it in fact gets into your bloodstream and in fact does what it's supposed to do therapeutically.
Right.
Most countries around the world actually test their generics to be sure they do that, and they randomly test for what we call bioavailability, test to be sure that whatever that generic company is making, in fact, gets into your bloodstream when you swallow it. In this country, the FDA does not scrutinize those companies at all. So there are generic companies who don't bother to do those tests. They just make the chemical and package it in a tablet with whatever fillers are acceptable and don't even bother to test to see if it gets destroyed in the stomach or actually got absorbed into your bloodstream. That's the problem with generics. The bioavailability issue has never been tackled in this country, but all other countries pretty much do that or go by one or another country's, you know, analysis of that. And some people know all about that, but most people in this country are not as familiar with it.
Interesting. All right. Hey, we're here with Dr. Hicks. He is right here with his own rheumatology center, and we are going to be right back. If you've got a question, give us a call, 229-7984. We are talking all about this afternoon. Hope you'll stay right with us. Don't you go away.
The weekend comes, my cycle humps, ready to race to you. These days are on.
This year will be a simpler year, one fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love, a diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72 Greenwood, 229-6276.
Monday, happy days, Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days.
With Dr. John Hicks. We are having a good time talking about these diseases and trying to make sure that you know about it. We were just talking about generic versus the name brand drug. And, of course, the question is, do you know? And that was one of the things we were just discussing. There may be a difference.
The generics are not as well protected by chemicals or by coating as are the brand name medicines in general. By that I mean when you swallow a pill, it's going to get damaged by the acid in your stomach and the intestinal enzymes, just like all the food you swallow. These companies know how to delay that from happening to the pill even while you're digesting the rest of the things that you've got in your stomach long enough so that medicine can get into your bloodstream. The generics don't have that protection in them. So if you just drink a big glass of water and no food and swallow the generic, it has a better chance of getting in. The companies around the world and countries around the world usually do bioavailability tests on the generics. Most of those countries rely on generics, as this country is beginning to do, to keep costs down. But they do random tests on the bioavailability, as we call it. They test whether or not when you swallowed that generic, it really got into your bloodstream, and they do those randomly. So the companies around the world that make generic medicines are used to that. In order to survive in that particular country, they have to do those tests, and therefore the quality of those generics are better.
Do we import a lot of generics into this country?
Most of the companies in this country, yes, get their generics elsewhere in the world.
Okay.
There are a few generic companies, though, in this country.
Okay. All right. So that's something to be aware of.
This country doesn't always scrutinize.
But the FDA scrutinizes everything else. Why wouldn't they scrutinize that, John?
It's an interesting question. They only scrutinize the brand names. They don't scrutinize. They keep a list of what's the preferred generics, but not all companies in this country even go by that list. So you're right.
When you go to a drugstore, though, they always ask you, do you want the generic or is the generic okay?
That's a South Carolina law, actually.
Is it?
That South Carolina, the doctor is supposed to recommend the generic first, and then the pharmacies do the same thing.
Wow.
Just to keep costs down, but it keeps somebody's profits high, doesn't it?
Exactly. Very interesting. All right, we're learning a lot here today, and I hope you're enjoying what we're talking about. Dr. Hicks, one of the things that we had talked about just a minute ago off the air was the fact that your primary physician, you need to, if you're having problems with joints or something, you shouldn't just shrug it off. You should take that time to talk to your doctor.
Yes.
Yes. He says yes. About, you know, because sometimes we have a tendency to just say, well, I can deal with it, right?
Yes, and coming from a rheumatologist, obviously people think I have a bias, but the truth is it can be the signal of some more systemic disease, not just a disease in that particular joint. Lots of people will be practical about it and say, well, if it's just a little bit like that, it looks just like what Mom had. Mom had osteoarthritis, and it took her 10 years before it got into anything else. I'll wait another month or another year. In people who are watching it and not ignoring it, I suppose that's all right. I would certainly want them to at least ask their primary care physician about it. We were talking about that earlier, too. Do they have time to answer those questions in one word or less? But they
you
should bring it.
You only get 5 minutes or so, maybe seven, I don't know.
And we were talking about that, too. You should not ignore the symptoms, whether you're 10 years old or 70 years old. They could be the beginning of something much more serious than just the relatively slow and not so dangerous osteoarthritis.
Absolutely. So if something, I mean, I think it's one thing if you just had something and it's a little pain here one day and you don't have it several days later, it's gone. But if it's persistent?
Pain, certainly. And then another problem is that not all these types of arthritis hurt all the time or hurt very much. And we've seen dozens of people who come in to see us 10 years later and they've never hurt, but their fingers are all crooked already and the joints have already been severely damaged. So if you see some enlargement or deformity or loss of range of motion, that's an equally important signal to find out why.
Okay. So, you've corrected me several times off the air, not on the air, but you've corrected me several times. We always think of it as older people, but we were just talking about it's not just always older people.
Yeah, most of the inflammatory diseases like psoriatic arthritis and ankylosing spondylitis, and certainly juvenile arthritis by its name, start in people in their teenage years or even younger, and certainly in their 20s and 30s. Rheumatoid arthritis starts in your 40s. I hope people don't think that's old.
No, it's not. But I think, you know, you've always thought about that disease as you age disease, but what you're saying
is not. That's probably based on the osteoarthritis that affects your knees, which is much more socially visible. Because when people have knee pain, they can't walk, they're using a cane, they're complaining about it, and people can see that there's something really wrong with their ambulatory status. That's the osteoarthritis, and that usually does start much later. It may start early enough that it doesn't hurt you, but it doesn't really affect you until your late 50s, 60s, or even 70s.
So that's the osteoarthritis that
does occur as you get older. That one, we still don't have a answer for how to prevent it or how to stop it once we know it started. And many people are looking at that. We still don't know why. That one is just a genetically determined deterioration of cartilage, but only in certain joints, not all joints. And we don't know why it happens, and people are still trying to figure it out. Surgical interventions are what we do for that one. So if your knees wear out, as the word is used, they're not really wearing out. The cartilage is deteriorating, and the bones are becoming a little remodeled. So knee replacements, hip replacements, thumb replacements, we call it the MCC joint, are standard. Replacing the discs in your cervical spine and your lumbar spine are pretty much standard now and work very well.
Now, what about taking chondroitin and glycemine? I'm probably not...
Glucosamine.
Right. Does that work?
That was another fad or panacea, as you used earlier. And I don't know how that got started, but somebody thinks it started by somebody eating crayfish in New Orleans was convinced it made their arthritis better. And that was the chemical that was primarily in the shell of the crayfish. And then from there, people started grinding up the crayfish and lobsters. And then from there, people began to manufacture it. And it was just one of those things that spread like wildfire. And we don't know why it caught on or why in the world people would even think that would help. Long story short, because of the widespread selling by multiple manufacturers of glucosamine or chondroitin or the combination, the NIH finally decided that this could be a health problem and tested it to make sure it wasn't doing something wrong. They had no evidence that it did anything right. Mm-hmm. I mean, the stuff doesn't even get past your stomach. It is totally destroyed in your stomach.
Oh, my God, I've been wasting all this money is what you're telling me.
They even tried putting it in intravenously, it still doesn't go to the joint. They even tried injecting it into the joint. It's absorbed by the synovium around the joint and taken back to the liver and dismantled, so it doesn't even stay in the joint. A big study comparing chondroitin, glucosamine, combination, and an active drug, Celebrex, which you probably have all heard, and then a placebo, nothing in it, showed unequivocally that none of those components of glucosamine and chondroitin had any better effect than just placebo. And that was
done five or six years ago. I've been wasting this money then.
People who are convinced that there's something in there that makes them better, we've proven is due to the common practice, which is legal, of putting ibuprofen or Motrin in these preparations. And
okay.
That is legal, and that is commonly done.
Unbelievable. Well, you know, I just learned something. I don't need to spend that $29.95 I've been spending on You just saved me a trip here. So
I hope one of those companies isn't listening to this.
We're almost out of time, Dr. Hicks. What other would you like people to know that maybe we haven't covered this afternoon?
Basically, we can stop the damaging rheumatoid arthritis and psoriatic arthritis nearly completely.
Wow.
That's the message, and I still hear that at least once a week or once a month from a patient who said they didn't know they could really stop it. They hear the advertisements for things like Enbrel and Remicade, but they don't realize that these drugs can actually stop the disease and stop it without doing anything else wrong to you.
Wow. So there is
hope. That's the message. We can stop these diseases.
All right. So talk to your primary care physician.
That's the easiest way to get the first level of information, and where they're too busy, ask them again. And if you're still not getting the answer, ask them who else you can see. An orthopedic surgeon if it's just one joint, rheumatologist if it's a lot of things.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's been great having you here. It's been way too long since we've had you here, and I'm so glad you were able to come on. If you'd like to find out more about Dr. Hicks, you are right here in Greenwood, 917 Bypass 225 South. That's up, actually, you said, by CPW, main office of CPW, correct?
Yes.
All right. So check it out, Dr. Hicks. I know that you are having a good time here. You been on any good trips here lately? Done anything fun that you want to tell us about here today? No, Ann, I don't want to tell you anything about what I've been doing.
Nothing that I dare tell the world.
Nothing you dare tell the world. Well, Debbie, your wife does work with you over there.
Yes, the joke is I work for her, actually.
Oh, okay.
No, she's the ICU nurse and infusion nurse, as we call it. Some of these medicines that we use are still given intravenously. I should have mentioned earlier, a lot of them are given by shots that the patients do. The intravenous medicines require a nurse to do in the office. And then she and I have been together and teaching patients and treating patients for as long as we've been married, I guess, and 35 years or more. If she's listening, she's going to cost me for not having that exact number.
That's okay. I've got a jewelry store right outside here, Dr. Hicks. No problem. Hey, I have enjoyed having you on the show again. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Come see us here. We've been very busy at Sharp Passes buying gold, so don't forget, we're right here on the bypass. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Again, our guest today, Dr. John Hicks, thanks so much for coming out today.
Once again, thanks for the invitation.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.